Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.
From Meat Eater's World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is Cal's Week in Review, presented by Steel. Steel products are available only at authorized dealers. For more, go to steeldealers.com. Now, here's your host, Ryan Cal Callahan.
For the first time in 100 years, a grizzly bear has been photographed in prairie habitat along the Missouri River breaks. The conservation organization American Prairie, formerly American Prairie Reserve, or APR, first reported back in October that grizzly tracks had been found in this area of central Montana along the Judith River. The group set trail cams in hopes of capturing a photo of the grizz, and their efforts paid off earlier this month. While grizzlies today occupy mountainous regions out west, they historically lived in prairie ecosystems as well, which everybody knows why that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio is kind of crap. Because although the grunting and the pain and the dragging and the whatnots that happened did look very realistic, the landscape was not. That's a prairie story, not a mountain story. But I digress. Grizzly bears are well adapted to life on the prairie, which offers abundant food sources such as fleshy roots, berries, fresh prairie grasses and forbs, rodents and carrion. They were driven out of these areas by settlers, but as their populations have expanded in recent decades, they're beginning to reoccupy the American Great Plains. And speaking of big old grizzly bears, I'm sitting here with Douglas Duren, sharing the land, famous Doug Duren. This is what's happening in the My Week segment of this podcast, and really the rest of the podcast. As you know, we've been highlighting conservation organizations because I get so many emails, messages, texts, smoke signals, what have you, saying, hey, what groups should I get involved in? What should I show up for? And I like to tell people, sign up for newsletters and decide for yourself. But a lot of those people then reply, well, can't you just tell me? So this is another step down the road of doing things the hard way, the Callahan way, of learn it and make a decision on your own. You're an adult. So this week we are highlighting the Sharing the Land Project, or just Sharing the Land, headed up by my good friend Doug Duren. Doug, what is Sharing the Land?
Well, Sharing the Land is the idea is as old as the bartering system. It's a conservation cooperative network of people, access seekers, and landowners who get together. The access seeker provides some contributions to conservation of the landowner's property or some other conservation contribution that the landowner is interested in. And in exchange for that, they're allowed to access that land for whatever arrangement the landowner and the access seeker agree on.
But for our purposes, what we'd be interested in is like the hunting, fishing, maybe foraging aspect of getting to traipse around somebody's private property.
You're exactly right. Most of this is based around the kind of stuff that the folks who listen to you and a little bit to me like to do. We've had, even this week, some access here, some hunters here, deer hunting. There's really no limit to what kind of access that a landowner can provide or that people can look for. But 99% of what we're doing is hunting, fishing, a little bit of camping. So it's great.
Yeah. I guess the short version would be tell people right now where they can find Sharing the Land and how easy it is to find somebody, right? Because there's two sides. There's the people with the land, and there's the people who want to get access to that land. So if you are somebody with land and you're interested in having people come out or contribute to that property value or conservation value of that property, how do they get involved with Sharing the Land?
Well, both sides, both the folks who want to access and the landowner do the same thing. You go to sharingtheland.com and you'll see on the website some drop-down fillable forms. One is for filling out a conservation resume if you're an access seeker, and that is exactly what it sounds like. You are putting your best foot forward and telling the landowners who you are and what you're about and the things that you're interested in. And that's like any resume, you can build on that resume. And if you're a landowner, you go on there and there's a drop-down fillable form called a cooperating land profile. And there you can fill out information about your land, what you're interested in having help with, and what access, hunting, fishing, camping, foraging, you're able to provide to folks. And then that information comes to the Sharing the Land World Headquarters here in Casanova, Wisconsin, with our satellite office in the state of Washington. And we put those two groups of people together. I will say this, as you might imagine, we have a lot more folks who are filling out conservation resumes who are access seekers than we have landowners who are filling out cooperating land profiles. There's more access seekers than there are landowners. And of course, the landowner has, they have to think about their own interests. And if it's something that's for them. So we've been recruiting landowners, and it's been a real interesting process listening to what landowners are concerned about and then addressing those concerns. And access seekers are, continuing to put stuff in and their information in. We have 30 properties in 9 different states, and we have over 300 access seekers. And as you might imagine, we have access seekers in places where we don't have land, and we also have land in places where we don't have access seekers. We just had one in West Virginia that we put a call out on Sharing the Land Instagram page. You can find that through Doug Duren, at Sharing the Land on Instagram. We put a call out, and we did get some folks responding to that. And we also had a piece of property in New Mexico that landowner, we didn't have anyone there. We put a call out and we got a couple of folks and that's working out.
What kind of recent examples of Sharing the Land in practice can you give? I know, I'm here because I'm buddies with you and got to hang out for the family and extended family friends opening weekend rifle here in Wisconsin, which was super cool. And I know you were getting some text messages of the program in action.
Oh, yeah. So Our Farm Aside, which has been part of the model, right? Our Farm Aside, we have 4 properties in Wisconsin and it being opening weekend. One property about 7 miles from here, the landowner had reached out and said, I'm really interested in doing this. And I can take a couple of deer hunters. And I was like, oh, well, we kind of like to have folks do work first. And he said, if it's the right people, I'll work that out with them later. So I actually had a father and 2 sons who I introduce them, and I know both sides of this equation pretty well, both the landowner and the and this access seeker, and put them together, and they've already worked out a deal. And lo and behold, a 12-year-old young man went out and shot his first deer, nice little buck, on that property on Saturday. And they've already made plans for what they're going to do to help the landowner. So that's a great one. We have a property up in the Stevens Point area that a couple of people have been working on for, since last spring. They did a little turkey hunting, but they just started deer hunting, and it sounds like they had great success. We have another property south of here that has one person on it and very actively managed property, and this person happened to have the access seeker happened to have skills and background in prescribed fire and chainsaw safety and that sort of thing. So it was a perfect match because it's an older couple who need who've done a lot of that kind of work but are getting to the point where they probably shouldn't be swinging a chainsaw and they need help. That's been fantastic. We have two properties in two landowners with three different properties in North Dakota. And they're out there. Folks have been pulling wire out of the ground and helping them plant. They've been rolling up fences, but they've been also helping them plant wildlife shrubs and that kind of thing. And they've been doing prairie chicken and pheasant hunting out there. So those are some of the ones that I can just reel off the top of my head.
So what is all the vetting being done by Sharing the Land?
So what we are doing is getting the resumes together and we'll look them over and see which one might match the best with some of the landowners. From there, we don't, we keep the landowner's information private. We send them the people who've applied and that we think are appropriate. Then they, like any, job, kind of look through the resume, see who they'd like to talk, and what we tell them to do is to start out slow, have a conversation. If we've got multiple access seekers, talk to a half a dozen, again, just like it would be a job interview. Talk to, if you have room for two, talk to four or five. See which ones you feel, you know, the best about. So start out with that, and then start out with a small project, and then move forward. And so the vetting is really done by the landowner as the if we were using the employer-employee thing, as the employer, you know, looking into that person. We have some suggestions, frequently asked questions about vetting, and if there's concerns about, backgrounds and that kind of thing that can be done. But really, where it really starts is those people having that conversation and developing a relationship, sort of like a door knocker. We're kind of providing a door knocker opportunity, right? Where we're matching people up. We then provide a agreement form, and they can use for, you know, for their own purposes and make changes to it. There is insurance that's available through insurance provider, outdoor, you know, insurance, hunting insurance, and as a part of the agreement, there's a hold harmless part of that. And at the end of the day, most states have a recreational access law, which if you're allowing someone to hunting your property, and as long as what they're doing for you is sort of hunting related or conservation related, there you can have an exchange. Wisconsin has one. You can actually take up to $2,000 in money or value and still be covered under the recreational access law. A lot of states have very similar laws, and there's actually a website that we direct people to, and we provide as much information that we possibly can to both the landowner and the access seeker so they get them, you know, they know what they're getting themselves into.
Awesome. A lot of people think that getting life insurance means you're insuring yourself for yourself, but it's actually the exact opposite. It's insuring yourself for your family. So if something happens to me and I'm not around anymore, I can have more peace of mind that my family can have some financial support, and that's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. More than once in my life, my journey, people have described me as an independent person, and that's how I want to stay. Even when I'm dead, that's how I want to be remembered. That's why I have life insurance. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you've got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/cal. That's meetfabric.com/cal. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/cal. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly, and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. Pay attention here, because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options, like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks, or you open your medical emergency kit, you match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription, and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at twc.health/meateater.
What, I guess, is the most common, from what you've seen so far, what's the most common labor trade that you see? What are people really needing out there on the farm or ranch?
You know, it's usually really simple stuff. We're fixing fence. We're taking down fence. Maybe we're limbing trees. Prescribed fire. If you've done, I know you've done burns. You need two things when you do a prescribed burn. You need people and water. And if it gets Western, you need a lot of water. So, but that's a really great thing. So that's a skill that people are learning too. So those are some, invasive species control. I think I may have mentioned that. And then it becomes a question of, well, what skills do these people have? And in some cases, I've had landowners, including myself, just have people come out and help with simple chores around the farm. Shovel a little manure for me. You earn some favor. But you know, picking stuff up, some carpentry work is another one. People have done lawn work for people. Trimming some apple trees have been done. So
skilled labor is always great, but the reality is many hands make light work. And, if you're just willing to show up and be open to a little bit of sweat equity, they can find a job for you.
That's exactly right. You know, the old thing was, hey, I'd come and help you bale hay. Well, we don't really bale hay like that anymore, the square bales and stack them on the, you know, it's sort of that idyllic idea, right? But we don't really do it that way anymore. We roll them up and move them around with skid steers. I've had people come and just help, like, shuttle equipment around and get, you know, get things in places where we need them. What we like to do is to say that the hunting, the work of getting ready for hunting is not really a part of the sharing land agreement. That's, you're going to do that no matter where you go. So, you know, the contribution to conservation. One of the projects that we did here, and I know that one of the landowners in North Dakota did something similar. We actually had conservation stewardship, and the one in North Dakota had EQIP projects that they needed to get done. My CSP work was limbing pine trees, limbing and thinning. Well, the limbing, sure, it would go faster with chainsaws, but you take a half a dozen or eight people up there with, you know, with some of those nice steel loppers and start cutting limbs off, or with the electric pole saw, you know, you have a nice quiet time in the woods, kind of lopping limbs off trees and talking and kind of explaining what we're doing. And if you get to a point where folks really need to, when that project needed, you know, heavier work like chainsaws and like my tree terminator and that kind of stuff, we just plan to do that at a different time. What I liked doing here and with my friend Brock, and who's running a lot of this stuff, is that we would plan for an hour on the front end of talking and explaining what we're doing, 3 or 4 hours of work, and an hour on the back end. And oftentimes we'd end it with a, you know, with a little shooting or a little more of a walk on the farm to look at other things and maybe what the next project is. Another project that's I'm real excited about, and in fact, I'll be going down there next week to do some filming, is one on a prairie seed production farm. And last summer, we did a bunch of work on the guy's property. 6 people showed up, and Hoxie Seed, who's one of our sharing land cooperators or landowners, we went down and did a day's worth of work, helping them dig big blue stem out of Indian grass. And then we did a bunch of hand collecting of seeds that are best hand collected. And, now next week we're going to go down and do a day hunting with the same folks. And, Onyx has sent in a film crew, and they've been, you know, documenting this. So we're trying to tell these stories as well, but that, and that's a great story. Now, the Hoxie Seed folks and what they've done and how they need that. It's real simple. I mean, it takes 5 minutes to learn how to dig out a big blue stem out of Indian grass. And it takes shorter to learn how to hand collect false indigo or butterfly weed. And you're really helping those guys out.
Like what you're glossing over from somebody with a lot more knowledge than I have is, you know, a huge benefit to me. If I was to come out and do that labor, would be to learn what that stuff actually is.
Yeah.
And why animals like it. Right.
Yeah.
And then when I head out into the fields looking for birds or looking for bucks, I can identify that good native habitat that puts a lot of good fat on wild animals. One thing that I want to talk about here before we wrap this up, Doug, is another just kind of cool experience that you helped provide here. You had a group from Can-Am come out, and Can-Am brought 3 first-time hunters to the ranch. The farm.
It's not a ranch, it's a farm.
First-time hunter experience is so interesting. This area of Wisconsin is known for really big bucks. Your perspective on managing for wild deer, trying to make wild deer as big as possible, has really changed over the years. So even though they were coming out to a county that's known for big whitetails, the speech that you gave was, you know, we're not selecting deer here. We're trying to remove about 60 animals this year. Most of those are going to be does or doe fawns. Cause that's just how it, you know, nobody walks out to a field full of bucks, but, the takeaway was if you are happy with that animal, we're going to be happy with you. And that's kind of the management practice. It's a total population objective versus a very selective individual animal perspective.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about that is for about 7 years now, we retired the sombrero and we have not been doing buck management per se. Let him go so he can grow. I don't tell people you have to shoot the first buck that comes in front of you. You can make that choice. And you're right. Whatever animal you choose to shoot, if you make a good ethical shot, take a good ethical shot, be happy with that animal, and we will be happy with you. And it makes it so much easier to manage the whole thing. We've been providing, as of some of our other landowners, been providing learn to hunt opportunities with our partners. National Deer Association is a great example. And they really have that healthy deer management attitude. We want a healthy ecosystem. We want a healthy deer herd. And we want to provide opportunities for hunters to get out there. And so all these things sort of wind together into the idea of sharing the land.
And what was interesting to me is, you know, we had people who were very aware of hunting things. They may not have been aware of them in the I go out and shoot deer perspective, because that's not what 3/4 of the group was. But they were all trained somehow, some way to say, what are we allowed to shoot?
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, like if you get a hunting license here and you select this county, you get a buck tag and 4 doe tags.
Right.
Right. Which but everybody was like, okay, well, what is the, you know, is it, how old does the deer have to be, or how big does it have to be? And what I saw was honestly a pretty collective ease of tension when it was, you know, if you want a deer, I suggest you take the first deer that steps in front of you, that provides that good ethical opportunity. And then, as we started taking these first time hunters into the field, they were ecstatic with the doe or the small buck that they had the opportunity at, you know, and they were ecstatic in the field. And then once again, when they kind of got back to the farmhouse, they were like, I don't know, is this something I should be proud of? Or how cool should I be? And then you kind of had to re-talk again about, dude, that is your first deer.
Yeah.
That is a big deal. That is awesome.
Yep.
Right.
And as we demonstrated, sincerely, we were happy for them. We were happy with them. But it is so interesting that you brought that up. There was some preconceived notions with these folks. And I'm happy that we were able to knock those preconceived notions about a deer has to be so big, or we only want to do this, or, and boy, am I should be happy with that. There's just, it's so vital, I think, especially as we welcome more and more folks to the world of hunting, that we're just clear about that. We're all in this together. Let's be happy about the deer that we harvest, and be supportive of that. Between you and Jordan and I, for sure, and then the other guys who were here, everybody was happy for all those folks. And there was that tension easing again, just like it did when I said, you know, in our group meeting, pre-hunt meeting, that whatever deer you're happy with, we'll be happy with, as long as you're taking good ethical shots. And then every one of my other regular folks who were here walked around and shook people's hands and patted them on the back. And that was all very sincere. And you could just see that tension or those concerns leave. And it's so interesting, you know?
Yeah. It's like the hunting is this crazy thing. It's so responsibility heavy.
Yeah.
But it's way more simple when you're in the field, right? It's that saying of doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Even when nobody's watching.
Mm-hmm.
But then the social burden that we put on ourselves, the quite BS social burden, especially when you're around media people and writers and things like that, where it's like, how am I going to tell this story?
Right.
Right?
Right.
And it's like, you just put awesome food in the freezer. You made a great shot. You got to go experience somebody else's place.
Yeah.
That, you know, not a lot of people get to go check out. One of the beautiful things about hunting is going places that people who, you know, take the scenic byway or the ATV trail may be near, but they've never been to.
Yeah.
Right. And, it's very simple once you relieve that, social stigma, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a part of what we're trying to do with this. And certainly I think a landowner who's willing to meet people that most, for the most part, they don't know, but then get to know them and work cooperatively, spend some time cooperatively building a community that's based around conservation. You know, everyone should feel good about that. And really seen that with the landowners. These are the folks who are interested in that kind of thing. And if the access seeker goes in with that same kind of attitude or learns that same kind of attitude, then great. You know, we have most of our landowners who are, all of our landowners who are doing this are very engaged landowners. So they're proud of their property. They're happy to show it off. They're spending time on it. They like to share that.
Yep. And I think, if I may, that is something that gets lost in these transactional models of land sharing.
Yeah.
Like as we try to make things more efficient and turn them into a vacation rental that has hunting available.
Yeah.
It becomes another Amazon purchase. Right. And the purchaser doesn't get to say, holy cow, I can't believe I'm here. This is beautiful. How long has your family been here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, was the place always like this? What have you been doing? I see this is in CRP. I see you burned over here. I see, you know, all of those things, those little bits of like family history that come with the stewardship and cultivation of the land kind of gets tossed out the window when it's like, oh, here's the available dates. Here's the nightly rate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it can all be a part of it. I mean, I we've talked about this. I have a lease agreement with some bow hunters and, they've been here for a few years now. And, you know, because I don't bow hunt. And they've been here for a few years now. And I remember, Jack, the main guy saying to me, so I want to get this straight. So we pay X amount of dollars to come here and do this. And we have the exclusive access from the beginning of the season until this date in the season. And the day after we leave, there are going to be folks on here who aren't paying anything. So I go, that's right. He goes, okay, just so I'm clear. We've had a 7-year relationship with those guys. It's been fantastic. The folks who are coming the next day have been making contributions to conservation, either on this property or being volunteers for our conservation Congress, becoming hunter safety instructors, doing all those kinds of things, building a conservation resume. And that has a lot of value to it to a landowner, a person like me. So, you know, again, this is the kind of thing that you can kind of do these different levels of, but I know exactly what you mean when it comes down to when money's involved, it's different. It's just different.
Yep. But at the same time, nothing's free, right?
Right.
So yeah. Those volunteer hours, even though they may have not have been spent on this farm.
Yep.
You've been around, you know, you can see, where those, volunteer hours pay dividends. So, and how that can come back and affect you. So, as we talked about, which is a story we will not get into, we're going to sign off, but you know, when we, have the conversation about why it is that the non-resident rifle only, conservation package went from $160 a year to $200 a year.
Okay, let's not get into that. we talk about that some other time.
Yeah. But yeah, so one more time, Doug, where do folks go to learn about sharing the land?
You can go on to Instagram at sharing the land. You can also go to my Instagram at Doug Duren, but sharingtheland.com. It's very, very straightforward, and you'll find all this information on there. And if you're a landowner, feel free to contact me, and we can have a conversation about it before you do anything. But if you do go on there and fill out a cooperating land profile, understand that myself and my able assistant, Lindsay, are the only two that see that. It doesn't become public information until you decide that it does. So sharingtheland.com. And thanks very much for having me on.
Oh, thank you, Doug. We'll talk to you later, I'm sure. So that's all I got for you this week. Thank you so much for listening. That's right in. Let me know what you think of Doug and these conservation organization episodes that we're doing. Spotlights, if you will, by writing into ASKCAL. That's AskCal at themeateater.com. And let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods. On top of that, if you want to get out and do some cooperative stuff, like through sharing the land or stewardship volunteer hours, can't really hurt to pick up a clean, quiet, battery-operated chainsaw at a local knowledgeable steel dealer near you. Check out www.steeldealers.com to track one down. They're going to get you set up with what you need. They won't try to send you home with what you don't. And those steel loppers that Doug mentioned are great for limbs, but they're also great for taking the forelegs off a deer or making those nice rib cuts too. So thanks again. Get out there, be safe, be courteous, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.